Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of 3GT. That's Three Guys Theologizing. This is Barry York, one of the co-hosts. So I'm here with my friends, Scott Hunt and Kyle Borg.
Heidi ho!
And we've had some friendly off-the-air banter about the subject we're about to bring to you. And I've had guys flexing their arms and pointing their fingers and all kinds of things across the
arms
across the video screen, because what we want to talk to you about today, or at least with one another, is gun control, or how to view the right to possess arms. What's a Christian to think about that? It can be quite a controversial topic. There can be people in congregations, Reformed congregations, who can be pacifistic in nature, or there are others who are very open about the fact that they carry guns. And so we do hear quite a bit of buzz about this on occasion, and thought it might be an interesting discussion to have with one another. It brings to mind an anecdote from my days back of pastoring in Indiana, where on one occasion I had met a family going door to door and brought them to church. And after the worship service, one of the members in our congregation was enthusiastically greeting them and started telling them about the congregational shootout we were going to have next Saturday. And by the time he was done enacting how we blow away half a hillside, we looked around and the family was long gone. So we added that as one of the things you probably shouldn't say to visitors.
and we never saw them again.
So there is quite a bit of difference of opinion among Christians about this subject. And I guess I would ask first and foremost, why is this such an American thing? Of course, we do have listeners in other countries, and I don't know how much this particular topic will appeal to them. Some of them are in countries where people don't have even the right to possess guns. So why is this such an American thing, guys? Especially an American Christian thing, I should say.
Clearly, because when you go back to the founding of our nation as a nation back in this late 18th century, there was oppression on the part of the government. People were getting their weapons taken away just because troops were coming into a town and not happy about it, about things. So there was this idea that we need to be able to defend ourselves, and we have that kind of individual rugged self-sovereign spirit within us in America. So the idea of owning a weapon to defend yourself and your family against the evils of tyranny has stuck with us. And I think that is why it's still such a part of, at least part of our culture. And Christianity sees, a portion of Christianity, I think, sees the state as almost an enemy, or one to be feared for sure. And we need to have that right to bear arms and to protect ourselves and our loved ones and to preserve life. I mean, there's all those issues, I think, are what motivates those who may be pro firearm possession. But Kyle, you can add to that.
Well, I think it's probably far more of a complex web than we can begin to break down here. But I think a lot of what Scott said, you know, America is founded upon individual rights and civic liberties. And that is just part of the fabric of American DNA. I think perhaps in a way that you don't always experience in other countries, even in other countries that still have civic liberties and freedoms. America was very, very much founded. The very reason for the existence of our nation was for that idea. And, you know, the Second Amendment of the Constitution with the well-regulated militia, the right to keep and bear arms not being infringed upon by the government, we in America have seen that as one of those civil freedoms and civil liberties. And in particular, you know, why do Christians sometimes seem so vehement about this? Again, that's probably more complex than we can begin to get into, but I think there's many factors. I think the wrongful wedding of civil life with Christianity itself has led to some mistaken notions of that. And maybe we can get into it more, but, you know, the idea that my right to bear arms is an inalienable right granted to me by my creator. We sometimes do unite the civil realm with the Christian realm in a way that I think is very unhealthy and very unhelpful. But I also think it's generally true that biblical Christianity does put a high value on the sanctity of life. And that is not only the sanctity of life in the womb, as we often hear in our cultural arguments today, but the preservation and the protection and the defense of life. And a lot of people see the Second Amendment as being that civic liberty that is granted to us, proclaiming what I do think is our God-given responsibility to protect and to defend life when necessary. And so maybe it's because Christians do value the sanctity of life, or should biblically value the sanctity of life, that we also see that being reflected somewhat in the Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm. Of course, some people would hear what you're saying, Kyle, and they would say that's actually against the sanctity of life, because they would look at what's been going on in our culture, particularly in recent years with all the mass shootings. And of course, one response to that would be, and you do hear this in the church, would be, well, if there weren't the guns, then there wouldn't be all these killings. How do you guys hear that play out in discussions around a fellowship lunch table, or in living rooms, or when you're with other people in your congregation? What are some of the viewpoints you get there when this discussion comes up?
Some of the viewpoints I get is going back to the Second Amendment, not necessarily addressing your issue, but I've heard things such as, you know, the Second Amendment was dealing with muskets and little handguns. It wasn't dealing with AR-15s and you know, assault rifles and these high-powered handguns. So it's a different time. And there's also just this idea I hear that if you get the guns, if you make guns illegal, you know, people cannot have them, then this gun violence will go away. Look at, we have to do background checks. We need to do a lot of things to control who has weapons. And I think that's a rational response. I don't think it's an irrational thing to think that those things wouldn't help. I don't necessarily agree with them, but I can see certainly where somebody is coming from when they make those arguments.
And biblically, Scott, you said you didn't agree with them. So what would be some of your rationale? Because I know I don't think you, when you say that, you're arguing simply as from the Second Amendment per se, but probably have more biblical rationale with disagreeing with them. How would you address that if you were having a conversation with one of these individuals?
Actually, I was thinking more practical than even biblical. Because of my profession, I see, you know, we have gun laws in Indiana. We are a pretty free state with respect to weapons, but
not as free as Kansas.
Well, that thank you. We have murders that are committed by stolen firearms, by illegal firearms. We have criminals with guns that are illegally possessed all the time. So I just don't see that argument as panning out. And I you know, I don't know exactly what you were looking for, Barry, if that helps. But, you know, those are some of the reasons. I just don't think that they're thought out thoroughly. But I don't know if that's what you were asking.
You know, I agree with Scott. I think a lot of those are rational responses. And I think we do an injustice if we just plug our ears and ignore the idea. You know, as society, we need to think through carefully how to restrain evil, even in the civil realm. And I think that there are arguments on both sides to be made. And I think that we all personally, I just think from a civil perspective, we would all do much better in learning to listen to the arguments on both sides of the aisle on that one. I do think, though, that as a Christian, as I think about that and, you know, the people who want to say, well, you know, let's enforce really strict gun control, or you've got some of these Democratic presidential candidates who are saying, yep, we want you to turn guns in and we're going to have a buyback program and things like that. You know, I think it's falling for the age-old mistake that evil and wickedness exists outside of us. You know, Jesus makes very clear in Mark chapter 7 that it's not what you put in that defiles a person, it's what comes out. And Jesus himself in Mark chapter 7, verse 21, makes very clear that murder at the end of the day is not a handgun issue, it's a heart issue. It's not an AR-15 issue, it's a heart issue. Jesus says murder comes from the heart. And it's very easy to want to impose certain standards, do not handle, do not taste, do not touch, and think that will ultimately solve our problems. And again, I want to be sensitive because I think civil society has a responsibility to figure out outwardly how to restrain evil. But we can't lose sight of the fact that ultimately murder is a heart issue. And whether or not you regulate guns to a very strict stance or anything, you're still going to deal with the reality of sin, and you're still going to deal with the reality of murder in the world around us.
Mm-hmm. So, and with respect to, again, people respond to cases. And so if you see a mother whose son was killed in a school shooting, and she's making a plea to, let's say, for instance, she's brought before a committee of Senate, and she's being pleading with them to outlaw all AR-15s. Would it be a Christian position to say that the government doesn't have the right to do that, or does have the right to do that? Are they taking away an inalienable right of a believer, for instance, if they say that the citizens of their nation aren't allowed to possess certain firearms?
You know, to be very straightforward and very blunt, I think the simple answer is no. I think that a civil government has the right to either allow their citizens to bear whatever arms they want or to restrict that. And here is where I personally would be very sensitive, probably much to the consternation of some of my most right-leaning friends. I think it's within the authority of the government to say, yes, citizens have a right to bear arms, and here's the arms that they may bear. And it's within the purview of the civil government to be able to say, well, no, we're going to have strict gun control, and we're not going to permit for these things. Personally, for my part, my biggest concern is not defending some so-called inalienable right, which I don't think bearing guns is. My concern is that we do things, I guess, constitutionally. And we need to leave it to constitutional scholars there, but I don't like the idea of imposing laws that skirt the civil liberties that are given to us in the Constitution. And so if people really want very strict gun control, I guess my response is, okay, yeah, that's the world we live in. That's the nature of the republic that we live in. Just do it according to the rule of law. If that means that you've got to amend the Constitution and the Second Amendment, then do it. It's hard work, but do it. Don't skirt the legal basis that we have established in dealing with questions like this.
And see, I don't know that I would disagree with Kyle. And for the record, I'm not a member of the NRA. Before you accuse me of being appointed by a president or some commission again,
Scott, I'm not. Nobody should ever disagree with me.
Well, I don't see any biblical warrant for a government to do that.
I'm sorry, for a government to do what, Scott?
I'm sorry. I don't see a biblical warrant for a government to deny a person a right to bear arms. It's just nowhere. The only thing you could say is when the argument you could make is when Peter strikes the ear off of, you know, takes a sword out and cuts the ear off of the troop.
Name is Malchus.
Thank you.
I only know that we grew up playing Bible trivia, and that was the question once. What was the name?
His name was Malchus.
And his, And I didn't know it, and I did not get to work my way up the rainbow. And so I went and looked it up, and I've never, it's Malchus.
That might be the name of this podcast. His name was Malchus.
His name was Malchus. So Jesus condemned not that Peter had a sword, but that he used the sword wrongly. Jesus actually encouraged them to go out and buy a sword. That was the weapon of the day, right? I don't see how biblically there's any warrant for the king to come and take your horses or your spear or your bow and arrow. None of that. So I don't think the government should come in and say, no, you can't have these things.
So, Scott, you're saying you don't see a biblical warrant, but do you think it transgresses the God-ordained place of the civil government? Do you think if the civil government were to say, you know what, we're going to go through the process and we're going to outlaw it, we're going to amend the Constitution, Second Amendment is gone, citizens may not bear arms or keep them, would you say that they are, in the eyes of God, wrong for doing that?
And just to give biblical warrant, perhaps, a verse that's often used would be one such as Isaiah 2:4, where, and it's talking about the nations, and it says they will hammer their swords into plowshares, their spears into pruning hooks, so indicating there's a time where a country might, for the sake of peace, again, this is the way this could be interpreted, for the sake of peace, they would do away with some of their weaponry.
Well, I mean, I suppose you could interpret it that way. We can interpret a lot of things, a lot of ways.
Wow. Yeah. Man.
I'm just trying to give you what I hear. I'm not
necessarily. The gymnastics Barry is doing right now would make an Olympian blush. Good work, Barry.
I think whenever a government does something that is not warranted by scripture, they run the risk of becoming too powerful and too authoritative and being like that king that's described. Just blanked out, you know, when you ask for a king, they're going to be oppressive and they're going to take more tax. And so it just opens the door to all types of things that I just don't think are appropriate.
So that's
my opinion.
Clearly, Scott believes in the regulative principle of civil government.
So one of the things you're saying, Scott, kind of, is that though there is a danger in people bearing arms and using them wrongly, that there's also a danger, and perhaps a greater one, if a government was to take that right away and in their oppressing the people underneath their rule.
Yeah, I think they're
summing up.
That's what I'm saying. You know, there's a danger in driving your car. There's a danger in, you know, running with a pair of scissors.
There's always a danger in running, period.
Yes.
Period. So I guess I don't see the need for the government to ever be the parent of its people.
But do you see that it's in the interest of government to promote peace in the land, that there needs to be regulations over how these things are used and how much firepower can be placed in a certain people's hands? For instance, let's say it became easy to make a nuclear bomb. I don't know necessarily I want to live next door to someone who's doing that in his basement, that he has that power to make a nuclear bomb. So I do think we would recognize that the right to bear arms, the right to protect oneself, has some limits to it when it begins to be endangering actually those that are around them. Correct or not?
Sure. No,
Here's where I find myself, Scott. I simultaneously want to give you a thumbs up and a thumbs down. And,
are you sure? Yeah, you're sure it's not a, like a finger in a gun shape up and a finger in a gun shape down?
No, Barry. I'm sure that it's not that. So, pragmatically, Scott, and I want to emphasize that word pragmatically, I think I would agree with you. I'm not any more interested in a nanny state than most people. I abhor the idea, actually, of federal control on much of anything. But I think for me, I don't know that a case could be made scripturally that a civil government does not have the right or warrant to run society in a way, if they think that this will promote peace, I think it's within their purview. I would not maybe personally vote for it because I don't like the idea of a nanny state. But I would struggle to say biblically they're overstepping any bounds of appropriate.
For the sake of peace and unity with my brother, I'll say you're right.
You've been arguing in the courtroom too long. You're conceding way too quick. I wanted a good fight with
you started talking about it depends who the burden of proof is on. So I thought you had a good, I think I know where you're going with it. So I'd like you to make that point. So start there.
So I feel like it just depends on who the burden of proof is on in that case. You know, is the burden on me to show that a government has, unless I prove it wrong, that they don't have that right? So that argument could go either way. I personally think that we have to have a reason for a government to do something, that we don't have to provide a reason why they shouldn't do something. And I don't know if that makes sense, but probably not. I understand and I appreciate your argument, but I don't agree with it because I think it puts the burden on the wrong party.
We already went over this. You're not supposed to disagree with me. And when you do it publicly, you really begin to hurt my feelings. So I think that's a fair point to make. That's a fair thought of consideration, is where would the burden of proof lie? Does the government need to be able to give basically positive reasons to do something? Or do we as citizens need to argue, if I'm hearing you correctly, do we as citizens bear the burden of proof to show why the government should not do something?
Thank you. You said it. I could not say it better, Kyle. Thank you.
Wow. Wow. The guys are putting down their swords.
Swords were such a first century weapon.
I'm just trying to speak biblically, Kyle. So in terms of making this practical, when we're having these kinds of discussions and congregations, let's try to sum this up a little bit in terms of some of the operating principles that we're trying to establish here with respect to gun control. I've heard a few things, but let me ask you guys to try to sum this up. What are some of the guiding principles we really need to have before us as we're having these kinds of discussions? Because we are, I hear these types of things popping up in different places.
Here's one of the things I would say. If you are putting your trust in your guns on your side, you're putting your trust in the wrong place. And that's for the right-wing Second Amendment people out there. Your trust is in the wrong thing if you're trusting in the Second Amendment, your AR-15 in your closet, and your 9mm at your side. That's the wrong thing. They can be taken away, and God can still protect you. So stop acting like if you get your guns taken away, the world is going to end. That sounds really odd. What I've just been saying, but that to me is the takeaway, that people put way too much faith and trust in their weapons.
That sounds like you're excising passages out of the Patriot Bible.
That is, if you cut Scott open, he bleeds red, white, and blue. I think in conversations like this, it's very helpful to maintain a couple of what I would call guiding principles, or Barry, what you did. And the first is that as Christians, we have to affirm in the highest terms possible the sanctity of life. And that part of the sanctity of life is also the preservation and the defense of innocent life. And that is, whatever else might be said to be or not be an inalienable right, that is binding by the law of God, that we are to preserve and we are to defend innocent life. That is what we would understand as Reformed Christians to be a part of the sixth commandment, thou shalt not kill, that the reverse is, the positive is true as well. I think with that too, that we need to always remember as Christians that ultimately these are heart issues. Murder and violence and hatred towards others is not something that can ultimately be solved by outward coercion and by the threat of the sword. And that the gospel truly does remain the hope for a society that is so broken with hatred and with murder and with mass shootings. I think a third thing that we need to remember is that our country is a country of laws, and scripture condones that and praises that, that we have a rule of law, And whatever we are to do, whether we are politicians or whether we are citizens, we are to act in accord with that rule of law, so long as it does not bring us into conflict with God. And so what I mean by that is that if people want to argue for gun control, please be my guest, do that, but please respect the rule of law in our society. We do not further anything by being antinomian, even with civil law. And then my final thing that I would say is that we as Christians need to acknowledge that I really do think there is room for disagreement on this. And I think we need to be very sensitive to that. We need to be very sensitive to those who have lost loved ones to gun violence, who deal with the realities of that. And we need to understand, and I think vice versa, people need to be sensitive to the fact that some people really do cherish the civil liberties that are granted to us, and we can't begrudge them that. And so I think here is a topic where we need to respect a difference of opinion and have a bit of a liberty of conscience. And just because somebody is in favor of gun control does not make them a flaming liberal. And just because somebody upholds the right to keep and bear arms does not make them a right-wing extremist.
At least necessarily.
Necessarily.
they might be, but not necessarily.
And I think, you know, for the record, Kyle, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. This is a heart issue. And I think when you get right down to it, both sides of this debate have on their heart a desire for life, I think. Yep. And they're just coming at it from a different perspective. So I think that we have to be very charitable in how we deal with this issue. People who are for gun control, I think you said it great. You know, they care. They want to protect life. And
most of them, the politicians probably don't. But
well, we're trying to assume the best of our. I'm assuming we're talking about this around a fellowship lunch table. So yep. Most of the people there, I think, have the right motives.
Yep. Yep.
You know, they want to preserve and protect life, and that is an admirable thing. And I can definitely see the Second Amendment people saying the same thing. We want to preserve and protect life. So I do think you're absolutely right that we have to exercise some charity in this discussion, understand where other people are coming from, and realize that there is not necessarily one easy right answer to this question.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I really appreciate those guiding principles. I'm going to add one thing, and then we'll wrap it up here. We've mentioned one biblical story where Peter was told to put down his sword. We also remember a little bit later, as they're being sent out, Jesus asked where their swords were as they were going out into the dangers of bringing the gospel to the Gentile world. And so there's a place to put them down. There's a place to pick them up. We, as Reformed Presbyterians, remember our covenanter forefathers who were watching a government systematically try to destroy people seeking to worship God freely. And some of them decided to, in Bible studies, to pick up arms in order to defend themselves. So I do think this is a matter of wisdom and one where we need, in the given moment, to really think wisely with our fellow brothers and sisters in the Lord what the right response is as laws are discussed and as situations arise in society. Well, we thank you for joining us for another episode of 3GT. It's always an interesting discussion, one you may not necessarily agree with at times, but we're thankful that you join along with us and listen to us. We're grateful when we receive emails or ideas about other topics. So if you want to address us that way, we'd be glad to hear from you. Comments on Facebook are welcome as well. And if you want to go over to our website, you can find us at 3gt.xyz, where you can learn more about us as well as ways to support us. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Three Guys Theologizing.